Next case on calendar is 70718, Sadie Caron, First Division of Industrial Relations. Counsel, do you wish to reserve any time this morning?
With permission, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Please begin.
Justice Stevenson, may it please the court. Adam Hosmer-Hitter, found Corona for appellant Sadia Caron, and with me at counsel table is Philip Mann. It is clear that under NRS 616A.110 subsection 2, that a waitress or a tour guide receives the benefit of Nevada's workers' compensation statutes, but that an actress is excluded from such coverage. This case presents what we believe is a question of first impression in Nevada as to how an employee with mixed duties of both an excluded and an included employee should be categorized for workers' compensation purposes. We ask this court to recognize the clear and articulable legal standard that categorization under Section 110 depends on a factual analysis of an employee's primary job duties. This approach is not only consistent with the text of Section 110, but also prevents unfair circumvention by employers. Without the primary job duties analysis, an employer could exclude its employees from the workers' compensation system by designating its waiters and waitresses as actors or actresses. An unscrupulous restaurateur could avoid obtaining workers' compensation insurance by having the waiters and waitresses audition for the role playing a waiter or waitress at that restaurant.
But my understanding is your client was an actress, though, was hired to be an actress, and it sounds like that was her primary duties, but she did these other incidental duties, like at the waitress and all that. So how do we deal with that?
We don't have a determination from the appeals officer as to what her primary incidental duties were. Okay. There was a significant gap between what her expectation was going into the job and what she was actually doing.
Her problem with what you're putting forth, even though it's a very good argument, it wasn't presented down below. How should we deal with this argument?
With respect to the argument about whether she was a performer, we would state that that was presented down below, and the appeals officer made a specific determination that she was a performer. And the division has conceded that these arguments were presented and addressed.
The argument that down below centered on whether or not she fell statutorily within the definition. But now we're looking at possibly imposing a new test as the responsibility test, which really was not articulated. I understand your point, but I throw that out there because that's a concern.
The first point, of course, is that this was raised below and that a question of her job duties, that she, whether she was a tour guide or an actress, was presented to court today. And although that argument was presented, it wasn't framed in the way we framed the primary job duties.
So the facts, at least as I understand them, we had someone who, and I'll use the term worked, and it's not an exact term, but she worked in costume and she did this. Then her time of work, performance, whatever it is, was over. She was now in normal clothes. She returned to something that they wanted to represent as a green room, no longer in costume. And she was then struck in the nose area with some tape object. So we get into all kind of issues as to shift over. Was she still in? What was she doing?
And none of those issues are right for this court, except for the issue of whether she was a performer and excluded under NRS 616A.110. The issue of whether she was in the course and scope of her employment, the district court found that that was in excess of the appeals officer's jurisdiction at that point in time. The division conceded that point. So whether she was acting in the course of her employment when she was injured is not before the court. And the sole question is what was argued and decided by the appeals officer that she was excluded from the protection of Nevada's workers' compensation system solely because she was a performer. And again, as to whether this court can address this issue for the upon appeal. That issue was decided by the appeals officer. It's right for this court to review. And the standard that we proposed is not necessarily articulated below. But that exact question of whether she was a performer was one of the central issues that was discussed below. And the second point I would add is that we also raised an equal protection challenge, which we believe can be considered by this court for the second time on appeal under the TAM decision from 2015 and other pieces of this court's precedent.
So let's say we accept your invitation to consider the legal argument of the standard by which you've determined whether somebody who may have mixed duties or mixed performances for her employer, the standard you're advocating for is what is the employee's primary responsibility or what is the employer's primary use of this employee? I mean, how would you articulate the standard if we were writing an opinion? The New Mexico case is a bit of a tough fit because the statute was defining the employer's business, not the employee's duties, as the state articulates.
And if it weren't for New Mexico, we would have no case law at all. So
yeah. That
is just the most accurate. The New Mexico case from 1980, the Holguin decision, says that an employee's job characterization should be defined by their primary duties or primary responsibilities. So we don't think that it matters what the employer does, and that's why the New Mexico Supreme Court ultimately found that statute was ambiguous and needed to serve results.
If that is wrong, then why are the conclusions of law so stated in the appeals officer's decision incorrect?
The appeals officer's decision is that Ms. Perrone was a performer because she was acting the part of the pose throughout the performance. And that standard is someone who is acting a part is thus excluded from the workers' compensation decision. We think that that is an error of law to say that someone is excluded from workers' compensation simply because they are acting a part, regardless of what they were actually doing. And that is a situation here that can easily lead to circumvention or post hoc justification for the failure to obtain workers' compensation insurance when an employer decides that they are going to have someone act a part of a petty waitress or someone at a themed restaurant or a dinner theater and say that that person is not a waitress but an actress serving and entertaining customers.
Well, counsel, conclusions of law number 7 states the claimant alleged injury occurred after the production was complete and she was no longer in character. The claimant was off the clock with other cast members in the green room booth. Even if the claimant was considered an employee, given the circumstances presented, the claimant has not proven by preponderance of the evidence that the accident occurred while the claimant was in the course and scope of her employment pursuant to NRS 616C150.
And that finding was struck by the district court and the commission conceded that.
Are we bound by the district court's findings in this case?
I think it
is. So is this a de novo review?
It's a de novo review of conclusions of law, but to reinstate that finding when it was already struck, I think that's a correct finding because the initial determination that she would not be subject to the, not be included within the uninsured workers' claim count was made on the basis that she was not a performer. That's an incorrect conclusion of the appeals officer to find, and that factual finding wasn't assessed at the district court simply because that determination had not been made. So again, if this court were to decide this case on the basis that she was not in the course and scope of her employment, it would have to penetrate two layers of lower decisions below and then go back and basically reinstate its analysis as if it was the division in the first place, deciding that she was excluded not because she was a performer, but because the injury happened outside the course and scope of her employment.
So your basic argument is we should follow what the New Mexico case said. Like that, and right interpretation of our statutes.
I think that is the only logical interpretation of these statutes, that you look at what an employer, and the division and the appellate agree, I think, to a significant extent in this case, about what the standard is. And this court really has three choices. It can find that an employee who is 1% of the excluded job duties constitutes an excluded employee under the statute. It can find that an employee 51% of job duties that fall within the category, the excluded categories, is excluded from the statutes, and that's our position as appellant. Or it can find that an employee must have 100% of the excluded job duties in order to be excluded from the categories in statute. We think that both the 1% and the 100% are too extreme. One, because if at the low end, someone with only incidental duties could then be categorized as included or excluded based on a small fraction of what they do. And the 100% is too extreme because someone should be excluded and the worker believes that they're excluded, or the employer believes that that employee would be excluded. For instance, if they were a referee, they had 1% of their job duties that weren't as a referee, then there would be ambiguity in the statute. So New Mexico, under the Holguin decision, follows a 51% test of primary job responsibilities. This is something that the division and the workers' compensation system use frequently to determine whether someone is an employee or an independent contractor. They do factual analyses, and here, the only way to make sure that a Nevada worker is protected, they should be under the Nevada workers' compensation statutes, is by looking at their primary job duties, or else there's difficulty determining both before they're hired and the employer makes the decision as to whether they get workers' compensation coverage, or after they're injured on the job and they didn't have workers' compensation insurance, that that's a situation that they're going to be put in some uncertainty.
You're at the 425 mark at this time.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Officer Don C. Smith for the division. May it please the court. Some of the questions you've asked are kind of exactly the same things I want to get to. And if I can, and try not to be too redundant, I want to go back and go over some of the basics, and I'll do it as quickly as I can. 616A110 talks about employees, and it talks about employee excludes sub 2. Any person engaged as a theatrical or stage performer or in an exhibition. I believe that, at least in terms of the question already, you realize the difference between the New Mexico standard, which excludes an employer or exempts an employer from workers' comp in the first place, as opposed to the Nevada approach, which is we look at what the person is doing.
What about the themed restaurant? I mean, I think Rio, for example, used to have a waitress who was an Ipanema girl. In costume, but she was also a hostess and a beverage server, and those were probably her primary duties, was to seat people and see to it that they got drinks when they wanted them. And
to me, that's fairly clear. What she is doing, if she's hired as a waitress, does she happen to have a specific costume, a specific uniform? Is it unusual for hotels, casinos, restaurants to require a uniform? No. Does a uniform determine what the job is?
But suppose she's supposed to be in character and act however an Ipanema girl would act.
Or the choice I would make, Your Honor, I'd refer to Dick's Last Resort, rather a restaurant that you have to be ready to be insulted. And that's putting it politely. Does that make them comedians? Does that make them actors or actresses? No, it makes them a bit obnoxious. It may be affected on their tip, but they're still waiters, and we're looking at the duty performed here.
But aren't we really looking at primary duties? I mean, if you have a themed restaurant, say, where they do a mystery, you know, meal with, I mean, this is sort of a scavenger hunt thing going on downtown in this case, but I'm trying to see a person who's wait staff, they're delivering food and beverage and a normal meal, but part of that is that they're going to figure out who is the murderer, whether it was, you know, Colonel Mustard in the library or what.
With a pipe bomb, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I understand the question.
What's wrong with the primary duty test that your colleague proposes? The primary responsibility.
There is no problem with it, but I don't believe that this is a case in which it should be adopted. I don't believe the record below presented anything on that. This is one of the issues of the people in this room and most of them in the county. There was only one of us at that hearing, and that was me. and that's not taking shots, but the arguments below were always, well, Ms. Rome is not covered under the statute because she wasn't performing on a theater stage. And if you look at the record itself, I counted in my free time last night, the record itself in the transcript of the hearing has at least 20 different references, and I can give you the pages and the line numbers, in which she acknowledges that she's an actress. She was hired as an actress. She's a member of the Screen Actors Guild. She's done many performances. And throughout her testimony, she talks about being Cuddles, the girl who's too dumb to be a stripper. And that was her role. And she is consistent in her role. And she is giving a performance. And she has an audience. And she is delivering plot points from the story. So what was her primary duty? If we also look back and say, okay, let's use their, I'll run with your question a bit and say, okay, let's use a primary job duty responsibility argument, okay? Let's do that analysis. There is no record before you that clearly indicates, well, I think there is, but clearly indicates how much time is involved in any of these other duties. We know that her performance, her time with the people, moving the plot forward, is roughly half an hour, 30 minutes. And we have references to, she takes a drink order, and she picks up donut rolls. And to quote her, not the air, but an actual little thing of dough, okay? Does that encompass 30 minutes? In terms of walking, I think there was one reference in all the transcript that it takes 7 minutes. During that entire 7 minutes, is she now out of character? No, she's in character. Is she behaving like Cuddles? I gotta believe so. That's what she says. That's what she testifies to.
Do you agree, I'm switching gears a bit here, but do you agree that paragraph 7 with respect to, as I read your brief, you're conceding that that was stricken appropriately by the district court, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We have always conceded that. We conceded it in our opening brief in the district court, and if I had...
So that's a non-starter in this case?
That's a non-starter in this case. Okay. The way in which workers' compensation cases work with an uninsured claim, the first issue is, was there an employment relationship?
Yeah.
And are they exempt? We haven't even gotten to any claims issue.
Okay.
So that was the nature of this hearing, was the assignment issue. Is this employee,
covered
person, an employee of the uninsured employer? We knew the employer was uninsured. Did we have an employee? And we say no, she was excluded. The next issue, if the case were in fact assigned, would be the claim acceptance issue. And that's the issues on findings of fact numbers 6 and 7.
Should we be concerned at all as to the equal protection that's raised?
I think you got to the points on the equal protection argument. The radical difference is New Mexico is exempting an employer, just flat out. That is not what happens in the state of Nevada. In Nevada, it's based on any person. Any person. It's the job duties and responsibilities of the person that exempts them. It is not the fact that, oh, well, excuse me, I will look for the phrase. Provisions, reading from New Mexico statute annotated 52-1-6, the provisions of the Workers' Compensation Act shall not apply to employers of farm and ranch laborers. Absolutely, are classifying outside what the duties being performed here. And that is exactly, well, strike that. That is not what happens in the state of Nevada. It is based solely on the employee. What was the employee doing? What was the employee assigned to do? What was their job? Um, see if there's anything else I may actually sit down.
Well, how would you articulate the test if you have a theme restaurant that, you know, I don't have a great example, but let's go with the Ipanema girl. Let's say she's in costume, she's in character, she is required to do whatever Ipanema girls do in Rio de Janeiro, but she is also serving drinks and seating people.
Is she graded on that? Is she evaluated based on her performance? Is she those kinds of issues?
How would legally we determine whether that Ipanema girl is an actress and excluded or a waitress and covered?
I would say what are her primary duties and responsibilities? Why is she there?
So you agree with the primary duties?
I do and I don't, and let me explain why. And part of the reason why is it's a bigger workers' comp issue that is not present here
right.
in front of you today.
That's what I'm trying to...
Which is, you know, when you go into the NCCI classification manual, that's exactly what you do. You have specific people and specific positions that have certain duties and responsibilities. You may call them an actress. Oh, I won't use actress. You may call somebody a
theatrical performer.
Let's do outside salesperson. Well, employers and performers are exempt, so I'm not going to deal with any of those sections. I've never had to deal with it. So it's the classification manual breaks it down. It's always the primary job duty responsibilities as to the employer for the calculation of premium and where they get classified.
Well, why would that apply here? Why doesn't that rule apply here? I mean, I think he's raising a fair point. How do we think and talk about whether an employee is covered or not covered when they have mixed job duties, some of which, if they did it 100% of the time, would take them outside of workers' comp, and some of which, the rest of which, if they did it 100% of the time, would yield coverage? How do we legally decide which... whether they're fish or fowl?
Well, now you're getting into a classification issue, and I don't believe the classification issue is necessary here because everybody conceded and all the testimony at the time of the hearing was she was an actress. She was performing. That was her primary job. That was her primary role. There is no differentiation. There's nothing in the testimony to talk about other than, well, she had these incidental things she did. But it doesn't tell me how much of that incidental, and please note the word, incidental, it's not primary. If you look at, even when you look at classifications, and this is in the bigger issue, in the big classification issue, it comes down to what are their primary. But that's a separate and distinct classification issue under NCCI. When we know we have an employee. In this matter, record is clear. She was considered a performer. It's all supported by the record. Thank you.
Rebecca, please.
The division suggests that one way to categorize an employee is to see how they were graded and evaluated. At the end of the day, Ms. Crone wasn't receiving feedback from her employer about her acting performance, her comedy routine, or stage blocking. She was receiving text messages about how many drinks were ordered, about whether too many drinks were ordered, and whether she could do more to steer customers to ordering water rather than more costly drinks. That was the feedback she got at the end of the day. The record is not clear as to whether her primary job duties were acting or waitressing or being a tour guide or being a stage hand. That's something that the record is absent about. The appeals officer applied one test, and it was she performing throughout the day? Was she intending to amuse and entertain the audience? And that was the test they used. If you apply that test, that covers potentially all of these other categories of employment, whether it's in a theme restaurant or at a theme bar where someone is intended to entertain the audience. And that's not the standard that we submit is proper under NRS 616A or under the equal protection argument that we raised. Most actresses, most theatrical performers, don't get off the stage and clear tables like Ms. Crone did. Most actors, Maggie Smith, their sir, Ian McKellen, won't leave the stage and then serve people popcorn and peanuts in the aisle. they won't sweep the floors. This is a fairly unique case in that an employee had mixed duties and did more than just act and more than just perform to entertain and amuse the audience. She actually did a lot of duties that could more properly be considered to be the duties of someone who is a tour guide, a waitress, or a stagehand, all of which are included professions. What we're missing from the record and what's clear error in the appeals officer's decision is that there's not a determination of whether her primary job duties fell into one category or the other. The division suggests that perhaps there's nothing wrong with the primary responsibilities analysis, and this is what I mean. I said there is substantial agreement between the sides on this question. And the question is, if that is the correct test, if we reject the test that someone is excluded from the workers' compensation system because they happen to be in character, then the only test that we submit remains on the table for this court is the primary responsibility standard. And if this court adopts that standard, then it would be clear error for the appeals officer not to have applied it. It's clear error, on one hand, to have failed to apply that standard if that's the correct one, but also not to mention any articulable legal standard in its decision. Because this is an administrative case, NRS 233B.125 requires the findings of fact and conclusions of law to be accurately stated with a concise statement of the facts supporting that legal determination. And we don't have that here. We have an appeals officer who made a determination that's very different from the standard that we're proposing or that the division is proposing. You haven't heard the appeals officer's decision in order.
Counsel, was not some of the difficulty, as you are articulating, based upon lack of representation at the initial hearing?
On the part of Ms. Crone, I believe Ms. Crone was represented by the Division of Injured Workers at least the district court proceeding.
So prior to her administrative review.
And at that point, I don't think that, I'm not sure if she was represented at that point.
Because that's where your initial record is made.
Hearing officer. But there's enough in the record as she testified as to both categories of her duties. And the appeals officer still had the obligation under our administrative rules to make a decision based on the accurate legal statute and findings of fact. And we are not challenging any of the findings of fact.
But as the test you are now proposing, has that test been established in Nevada? So it would obligate the hearing officer to have to go forward with the test at the time.
The hearing officer, we believe, should have gone forward with the test.
Well, should have been and is responsible for. They're two different things.
We, because it's a question of first impression, we think that it still can be an error of law if this court determines that in this particular case, a different standard or a new standard should be articulated. Her rights aren't prejudiced simply because the court hadn't, until this date, until our argument, delineated a precise standard that should apply under NRS 616A. And that's precisely why the only remedy we're seeking is reversal to the appeals officer, so that the appeals officer can take the factual findings that they made or conduct a new hearing and assess those findings under the rubric of her primary job duties.
It's surprising to me that other states besides New Mexico don't have this problem. Is this exception for theatrical performers unique to Nevada?
It's not unique to Nevada, but in other states it's articulated a little clearer, and our statute is one of those that's persisted for a very long time.
Okay.
And has been one that has been relatively unchanged, and so it hasn't been assessed. But these exclusions are applicable throughout at least 30, I believe about 36 of the states where certain categories of workers are excluded.
And you're saying that, may I ask one more question?
Go ahead.
That it's a, where it's a mixed duty, where you, the evening girl example I'm flailing around with, that other states, the statute actually addresses how you would analyze those mixed duty or mixed responsibility cases, not the case law?
The case law does not address it as far as we were able to find, Your Honor. New Mexico is the only one where we found the issue in the far room because, and if I'm just with your indulgence, a little bit about New Mexico, that statute that only applied to the employers, that was read out through case law. So they were actually considering the equal protection challenge of whether a farmer,
right,
wage laborer was similarly situated to some other agricultural labor.
Yeah. I understand that about New Mexico. I'm just interested in what, if we were to cut to say we need a standard in Nevada, why it is other states haven't adopted one besides New Mexico's. That's interesting to me. It seems surprising. But you looked and you didn't find it.
It was surprising to us as well, and the only state we were able to find where case law addressed it, and perhaps other statutes were clear enough that it did not come up
in
New Mexico.
And Nevada has many old statutes, I agree with you, which they're challenging. Thank you.
The court thanks counsel for the arguments this day, and thank you for being prepared and your responses to questions presented this day. This matter stands submitted at this time. We're in recess till 11.